This is a WTOP original podcast.
Welcome to another episode of the Vine Guy Podcast. I am your host, Scott Greenberg, and I have the delightful pleasure of having as a return guest, Erica Stancliffe, but this time in a little bit of a different capacity. When we first met Erica, she was working with Fendler Vineyards as a winemaker, and probably still is. We'll get to that in a moment. I think she still is. But she is here today in the capacity of working with Trombetta Wines, which is very exciting. We'll talk a little bit about that in a second. But what's really cool about Erica is she got bitten by the wine bug at the tender age of 10, when she demonstrated her skills that would later define her career as a winemaker and enologist. And yes, by the way, I did say age 10. One evening, respected winemaker and family friend Paul Hobbs, who she calls Uncle Paul, that's cute, came to her parents' home for dinner. A bottle of 97 Michael Black Vineyard Merlot from the Napa Valley was tucked under his arm, and after Erica declared that she didn't like wine, Paul asked her to stick her nose in the glass and describe what she smelled, and from the mouth of babes poured adjectives that would have made any wine writer, me, for example, proud. Now, Hobbs then asked her to describe the wine's flavors, and again, her sensory descriptions flowed, prompting Hobbs to exclaim, "You need to be a winemaker." Now, fast forward, she was raised in a food-centric family, and she credits her mother, Ricky Trombetta, the authentic Italian cooking for shaping her palate, but credits Hobbs for delivering the aha moment when she knew that being a winemaker was her calling. One afternoon, while she was still in high school, she was walking through a Chardonnay vineyard with Hobbs and listened intently as he extolled the rewards of the harvest and the satisfaction of making something with your hands. Quote, "Making that connection to the land was it for me," end quote, she said, adding that winemakers are really glorified farmers and chefs. Our wines are only as good as the ingredients we are working with. Wow. Out of the mouth of babes, indeed. Now, it continues following graduation from the California State University and an internship at Vina Cabos Winery in Mendoza, Argentina. Erica managed to inch her way closer to home. She worked at Rudd Oakville Estate, very cool, in Napa Valley, and Crossbarn Winery in Sebastopol before spending more than 2 years as a technical enologist in Anardis Vinquiry, where she provided consultative services for winemakers around the world. She also served as winemaker for Further Wines at Granton Ridge in Sebastopol. Since 2014, Erica has been at the helm as head winemaker for Trombetta Family Wines, and has helped her family's winery expand from 500 cases of a single Pinot Noir in a year to a broad portfolio of 1,200 plus cases of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. And her resume goes on and on and on. It is way so impressive. Erica, welcome back to the Vine Guy Podcast. It's so good to see you.
Great to see you too. Thank you for having me again.
Wow. So you have really, I think when we last met, it was 2021. And in 3 years, you have just continued to climb up the winemaking ladder. I am just so happy that you could spare a few minutes for me today. So let's go back to that aha moment. I am very curious. Do you remember what descriptors you used when you first stuck your nose in that Merlot or you first tasted it? Just kind of curious what you were saying about it.
So my mother had made a blackberry cobbler the night before for dessert, and it was kind of a staple in the summertime once the blackberries were coming in that she would make this, you know, a few times in those months. And Paul had come over for dinner. He brought the bottle of wine and we sat down to dinner, and he just, you know, my parents were so used to shoving glasses of wine in my face because my parents were home winemakers, especially my father in his garage. And no, you know, not to be mean about what it was he was producing in his garage, but definitely not what I would have considered a high caliber, premium quality, you know, Napa Coombsville Merlot for sure. So anytime I had wine shoved in my face generally by my dad was because I had a very, very sensitive sense of smell, very sensitive to aromatics, and very sensitive sense of taste. So when he would shove things in my face, it was usually because they smelled like egg, so sulfur, or smelled like nail polish remover, so VA and ethyl acetate. And so usually I had taken wine to be something negative, like those connotations of like, oh, this is kind of disgusting. Like, why would anybody want to drink this? So when Paul came to dinner that evening, and he told me to smell the wine, I was like, oh, no, thank you, I'm okay. And he got a little offended and was like, what do you mean? No, smell the wine. There's nothing wrong with this because of my connotation with my father's wines. And it just so much reminded me of the blackberry cobbler the moment it came out of the oven, you know, because with all that heat and after the fruit is cooked, it's definitely, in my opinion, the most aromatic. And so I just started talking about, you know, the smell of the crumble and the blackberries and how they're cooked and the vanilla, the pie crust and all of these different things. And Paul's eyes went wide and was just like, are you sure you don't like wine? You're positive? Because that was an amazing description. And I know a lot of, you know, seasoned winemakers who couldn't put something like that together.
Wow. So that was his aha moment about you as well, I would take it.
Yes, definitely was.
Wow. Okay. So look, I can't believe how much you've accomplished. You are, we're not going to talk about your age, but you are very young. You now have 16 harvests under your belt. And you have been described by the Press Democrat as a young Sonoma County winemaker turning heads, which I love that phrase. And you've also been featured in publications like The Wine Enthusiast, Forbes, San Francisco Chronicle, Rob Report, Martha Stewart. Okay, how do you get your head through the door in the morning?
It's very easy, actually, because even though I've gotten all of these accolades, something that you have to remember is that this winemaking community is massive. I mean, we're not just Sonoma County. It's not just Napa Valley. It is a global community. And there are so many amazing and talented winemakers out there. Yes, I definitely am very excited to be a female in the next generation that's kind of up and coming and turning heads, as the Press Democrat said, but I'm working with people who have been icons ever since I was little. I mean, I make wine in a cooperative facility for Trombetta Family Wines and for my other winemaking clients and brands. And I get to work next to people like Bob Cabral every day, or my best friend, Ashley Holland, who is, you know, Bob's mentee, who also has her own amazing brands. And she worked at Three Sticks and has been in New Zealand. So I'm constantly surrounded by other amazing and talented winemakers who not only I look up to, but also I get to call my peers. So unlike, you know, where I would say you could quantify something like an athlete who could be the best running back in the NFL because of their statistics, it's like you have so many amazing winemakers who have years of knowledge and accolades behind them, or other winemakers who are absolutely amazing and talented in their own right. So I consider myself just lucky to be able to see them and be considered on the same stage as those people, more than I think about where I am in that fold. I just think being lucky to be part of that game makes me happy.
Let's talk a little bit about that game for a second. About 20, well, you, first of all, you mentioned your mom, Ricky, and you mentioned Ashley. 20, 25 years ago, it was fairly uncommon to see women in a head winemaker position. And now today, we see a plethora of them. And you are, by the way, very involved in the women winemakers, particularly in the Petaluma Gap area. What do you attribute this kind of evolution of having women at the helm of winemaking, particularly now in Napa and Sonoma?
You know, as unfortunately with all things, time tends to be the telltale. I think for me, as a young child, getting to see people like Mary Edwards and Carol Shelton, who were just out there, like, you know, kicking butt and taking names and just making their way for themselves, because Mary Edwards and her family lived right down the street. Carol Shelton and her husband, Mitch, were very good friends of my parents. Like, getting to see these very strong women and these very strong role models as a child, I think that really is what helped pave the way for so many in my generation and all of these up and coming females, because we had these women out here who were just proving to everyone that not only should they be taken seriously as winemakers, but that they were extremely talented. And wine is you know, wine is like a food product. You are going to find a palate and a taste for every person, every grape, every varietal, every consumer, every winemaker. Everyone has a different style. So being able to broaden that spectrum of what it is that is being made is going to, in my opinion, make the wine industry a little more inclusive for more consumers who are looking for a specific flavor or for a specific type of wine. So I really just kind of attribute the rise in women winemakers and the women head winemakers to being that we had very strong women role models to look up to, and also looking at how wine has turned more back into that kind of European culture of something that everybody can be included in wine, as opposed to, you know, what you think about, for me, example, as growing up, where just when we went out to dinner at a nice restaurant, we would buy wine as opposed to my parents drinking what they made in their garage at the dinner table.
Well, no offense to your father, but it sounds like a much better idea, too.
So yes.
I have to ask, is your dad
much better?
Is your poor dad still making wine in the garage?
He is, but he got much better because people like Paul and Tom Dellinger and Carol Shelton were all kind enough to be like, and Fred Scher were like, hey, Roger, this is what you need to do. This is how you need to fix it. And then my parents did some classes at the Santa Rosa Junior College in UC Davis. So, I mean, definitely Paul was also a driving force in showing my father kind of like how to make it better than the jug in your garage, which was great. But then I started getting the phone calls when I graduated. So,
Okay. So now let's actually morph into that a little bit more. I'm sure you still give your dad some good advice on how to make his garage wine.
Yeah. But
why we're here today is to talk about what you're doing with your mom's brand, Trombetta Wines.
Yes.
And now I go back with your mom a little bit, you know, a few years, and I have always been in love with both her and her wines. I remember she was actually one of my very first podcast guests. I remember taking my first sip of her Pinot and going, this to me does not taste like a garage wine. This is a serious, beautiful, elegant Pinot Noir. Who was making her wines back then at the beginning?
Paul Hobbs. So Paul was how we started in 2010. He's the one who kind of kicked my parents in the butt and said, you guys need to start a brand. Erica's going to school. She's just about to graduate. You've always wanted to do this. You've been home winemakers. And that's where the 2010 Gaps Crown Pinot came from, our inaugural vintage. And then when I graduated and worked around the industry for a little while, it was 2014 that I came in and took over as winemaker with some guidance from Paul for my first year. And I made our first Chardonnay from Gaps Crown, actually, in 2014. Paul had some extra fruit that he did not want to use, or did not need to use, I guess is the better way to put it, from Gaps Crown. And he said, Erica, you really wanted to make Chardonnay. I think I talked your parents into it. Do you still want to do this? And I said, yes. And he literally pressed the start button on the press and walked away and said, have fun, and handed me the remote.
Oh my God. Wow.
So it was great though, because I was able to stylistically decide how I wanted to make the Chardonnay. And I love Paul and I love his wines, but it was really my first chance to show myself and my style as a winemaker. And when we had our sit down tasting with Paul at the end of harvest to taste through the wines that had gone through malolactic fermentation and primary fermentation and had a little barrel age on them, the biggest compliment that I will ever receive from that man is the fact that he, because you're tasting through so many wines when you're tasting with all of your consulting clients and everybody else, he actually swallowed the Chardonnay and poured himself a second taster of it. And I was like, okay, if Paul did that, obviously I didn't mess it up, so we're good. The college degree has paid off and all of those years of work. I learned something. Perfect.
Well, beyond the college degree, Erica. It's way beyond the college degree. You know, they may have taught you science, but you know, I think Paul and others have taught you art. Now let's actually talk a little bit about Paul Hobbs for people who don't know, because we keep mentioning his name, Paul Hobbs. He is probably considered one of the most renowned winemakers, not just domestically, but internationally as well. He's got several projects abroad. He's just very well known, makes amazing wines. So you really, it was almost like, I don't really know how to describe this to listeners, but it's like you're an art student and you've got Picasso as your teacher.
Pretty much. I mean, There are so many different analogies you could make. It's like he just, when you have someone who was so extremely talented, and Paul is brilliant. He's an absolutely brilliant winemaker, very, very smart man. I mean, he went to Notre Dame, and then when he was at Notre Dame was how he realized that he loved wine. And then he went to UC Davis and got his master's in wine. And that's when he was hired by the Mondavis and worked in Napa. So, I mean, his pedigree is also like, you want to talk about, it basically would be like if you had been a drummer for every major rock band in the 70s and 80s, and that was your resume list. That's basically who Paul Hobbs is. And being able to meet him at a time when he was starting, you know, his own label in the 90s, early 2000s, it really gave me access to him as, you know, a family friend, but as my mentor, that I don't think anybody other than fate could have really planned out better. Because he, you know, if I came out of a class and I was like, Paul, I'm really having a hard time understanding this theory, and I would call him and he would talk me through things. So, and that was also before he had 17 different wineries across, you know, 12 different countries. So now I think his time is a little, it's a little harder to get him on the phone because you don't know what time zone he's in. But it really provided the opportunity for me to learn so much from him. And he had the time to actually really nurture my wine education.
Well, okay, now let's take that one step further. Yes, Paul Hobbs is a wonderful mentor, and you've had a great education, technically. But now you've developed your own wine philosophy. I mean, you've grown yourself as an individual winemaker. Tell me a little bit about your winemaking philosophy these days.
So my biggest thing has always been that, and I've been very lucky to work with mostly single vineyard designate wines. Almost all of the wineries, you know, obviously Trombetta was founded on Gap's Crown Pinot, but everyone that I make wine for, it is all single vineyard designate, with maybe a few like Russian River, Sonoma Coast Pinots put in there. Being able to work with vineyard designate and single vineyard sites has really been able to show me the importance of choosing your vineyard. So you have, of course, different climates, and working with Sonoma County, especially, where there are so many different growing regions, so many different microclimates, so many different elevations. Are you closer to the coast? Are you up on Sonoma Mountain? Are you on Moon Mountain? Where are you making your wine? That finding the right site because of the climate and because of the soil and everything that that area has is extremely important. But then how that translates into the glass of the wine that I made is that I am then trying to give a voice to that vineyard, because that vineyard has something very special going on. So I would be doing a disservice if all of my wines were being made the exact same way across the board, and all of them start to taste almost identical to each other, because they're all very unique and very different. Like, we have our Gap's Crown versus our Indindoli now, and Indindoli is now our estate. We're leasing that vineyard. So Trombetta officially has its first estate vineyard now, which is great.
Very cool. But
Indindoli is in the heart of the Russian River Valley. I mean, it is in between Laguna and Vine Hill Road. So if you're familiar with this area in the Russian River, I mean, it's literally a mile as the crow flies from the river. So it gets socked in with the fog, but then it gets very hot during the day, and it has a nice gentle breeze, but it isn't too windy, but very sandy, loamy soils, just beautiful sight, much warmer. And then you go down southeast and you're into the Petaluma Gap and Gap's Crown, which is on high elevation. You know, you're talking 600 feet for the Chardonnay and about 1,000 feet for the Pinot. And it's wind barren just with that Petaluma Gap slapping it all day into the side of Sonoma Mountain and above the fog line. So it's a much cooler climate, much longer ripening window, and much different flavor profile than that of the Russian River. So it's just finding those nuances and being able to really give that vineyard the voice and the nuance of what the climate, the soil, and the site is doing is really what I feel like is my calling as a winemaker, and how I try to translate that from grape to bottle.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, I'm just going to say, personally, I've had a lot of wines from Petaluma Gap, and particularly from Gap's Crown, from different winemakers. And I have to say, Erica, and this is, I'm being completely sincere about this. I'm always drawn to back to the trombetta version of Gap's Crown, I guess for its elegance. And it's, again, this is true. I tasted your wines with my 26-year-old son, who hopefully he'll be visiting you soon, but we were going through these tastings and he was like, Dad, what's this one? I've never heard of trombetta. And we both were just, we finished the bottle.
Well, that's great. That's what it's meant for. It's meant to be enjoyed, especially amongst, you know, family, friends, and food. So that's awesome to hear.
And he used the same descriptor I did. It was elegant. It was genuinely elegant. So now I have to ask you more of, I guess, a personal question. Here you are working with your mom, Ricky Trombetta, Trombetta Winery. Tell me a little bit about the working relationship. I can't imagine, you know, working with my parents making wine. But
so she has a joke. Well, I have a joke that my mother doesn't love it when I say it, but for anybody, like you just said, you would never have wanted to work with your parents. For anyone who's worked with family, they'll perfectly understand what I'm about to say. No one's dead yet. So I absolutely love my parents. Do not get me wrong. And there are, I mean, you have a hard-headed first-generation American, Southern Italian descent, Italian woman. And then you have a younger millennial, half Italian, half English, like stubborn woman. And the two of us can, it can be catastrophic at times. But at the end of the day, we love each other. And with, you know, it obviously can be hard sometimes to separate the family and the work relationship because they are so completely intertwined. But at the end of the day, it's always that kind of reminder of like, okay, look, this is your mother, like you're her daughter. You two love each other and you're trying to both do what you believe is the best thing. So being able to remember that that is our common ground is what is able to pull us out of those moments. But it's definitely, it's gotten easier as time has gone by, just because we've really learned more about the other person's voice and what their vision is and what my voice and my vision is and how we can bring those together to really have a more cohesive kind of path forward. Definitely, I will say working with family is not for the faint of heart. My friends, my fiance, everybody around me is always like, so how are things going? Like, you know, it's harvest. And I'm like, it's fine. You know, we've had our calls, we've had our strategy meetings, everything is fine. And I, you know, have put my boundaries that I don't answer the phone between these hours of the day. And I don't answer text messages when the fruit is, you know, here in the winery, and we're good. Because once we can remember those, you know, like, I have a high stress job during harvest. My mother has to do a lot of the sales and marketing and running the business. And just remembering that we both have very stressful sides of the industry that we deal with. It makes things a lot better when we come back to the middle to try to meet and keep going on our path.
Well, I will say personally, I think that the combination of friction and compromise shows up as love in the bottle.
So. Good. I'm very glad to hear that because that's definitely what it is. It's a labor of love and it comes from both myself and my mom.
Well, you know, and now speaking of what's in the bottle, it's time for my favorite part of the podcast. What's in your glass?
So right now I have a 2021 Gap's Crown Chardonnay from the Petaluma Gap, which we have been talking about. And really fun fact about this Gap's Crown Chardonnay, it is actually just our most recent release of the Chardonnay, and it's on our website, TrombettaFamilyWines.com. But I did something a little different. So being that I've worked with a lot of amazing people in the wine industry, and someone who I worked with who's an old Fresno State grad, he was the winemaker. I did a short stint as the enologist / assistant winemaker for Michael Brown's new project, Cirque and Chev.
Oh, yeah.
And Jeremiah Tim, who is a Fresno State grad, was my boss as winemaker. And he now is actually working for Paul Hobbs, just recently made a change after working for Michael for many years. Jeremiah has a very different style of Chardonnay than I do. And working with him with Chev's Chardonnay, you know, they have a little more toys than we do. They have, you know, cement eggs and amphoras and things like that. But something they did that I decided to try with this 21 Gaps Crown Chardonnay was actually over vintaging. Normally what I do is I will bottle all of my wines after 10 months in barrel. So that way all of my barrels are empty come harvest. So everything is in bottle by August of the year after it was harvested. And for 21, I decided to over vintage it for another 4 months. I was like, let's try 14 months in barrel. I think especially the Gaps Crown Chardonnay could handle just a little more time on the lees, a little more time in the barrel. Now, granted, it's only 30% new French oak, so it's not a lot, but I just wanted to see if I could develop a little more mouthfeel. And I was very, very happy and pleasantly, you know, it was what I had anticipated, putting it in the oak a little bit longer and just leaving it there and letting the Chardonnay do its thing. Like, that Gaps Crown, because of the elevation, because of the cool climate, it has such beautiful acidity and it already has beautiful minerality and a lot of like really pretty tropical fruit characteristics. But then adding in that little bit more aging, those 4 extra months really brought the drawdown in the mouthfeel and just made it a little bit creamier, but, you know, creamy in the creme fraiche sense, not the custardy or cloying sense.
So, Eric, I hate to interrupt you, but for those of us who don't know, or my listeners who don't know, when you said it gives them a little more time to be on the lees.
Yes.
Tell us what lees are.
So lees are the dead yeast and bacteria cells and any solids that drop out of the wine during the fermentation process. So this can happen in tank, this can happen in barrel. And to get a little bit nerdy, what those cells have, because yeast are technically a fungi. They're very, very simple single cell organisms. And basically when they die, the cell walls are made up strictly of mannoproteins, which mannoproteins are what make that creamy mouthfeel. Also the lees, as it sits on the lees can actually have an enzyme in them that people always talk about buttery Chardonnay and about malolactic fermentation. And the lees have an enzyme that get rid of that diacetyl, which is the buttery component that malolactic bacteria can produce as a byproduct of malolactic fermentation when the bacteria eat the malic and produce lactic acid. So lactic acid, you're thinking milk, malic acid, green Granny Smith apple. So to be able to go from, you know, you have a broad spectrum, you think of dairy for those of us, especially anyone who likes milk in their coffee. You have so many different types that can be really heavy cream, butter, or something a little softer. And that's what those lees can do, is they take away that diacetyl. So you're not getting the buttery component. You're just getting something more reminiscent of like a fresh milk or a fresh cream. So that's just purely mouthfeel as opposed to flavor driven, which is why the lees, it's so nice to be able to do that extra lee aging and stirring the barrels once every few weeks to just really kind of help enhance the mouthfeel as opposed to kind of letting the bacteria turn the diacetyl and all of the butter in the wine.
I love the explanation. I was just kind of hoping you would say dead stuff at the bottom of the barrel. You know, you kind of nerded out there for a moment there, Erica.
I have my moments. Whenever someone asks me a question, I always go, do you want the short version or do you want the nerdy one? So right, yeah. I try to do somewhere in the middle.
It's the same thing in my house. I will say, do you want to know what time it is or do you want to know how the watch is built?
Yep, exactly.
Well, tell me about the wine itself. Give me some flavor profiles. Tell me what would be an ideal pairing that you would have this wine with.
Oh, totally. I mean, so this Chardonnay is something that I think it holds up to food so well, but something that I actually love with Chardonnay is risotto. And I love risotto with Chardonnay because of all of the Parmesan that I use when I'm making risotto. Like, let's be honest, I'm cutting off a chunk to eat myself and then shaving it over the top of the risotto once the risotto is finished. So for me, like, give me a good Parmesan cheesy risotto. It could be mushroom or it could be just a regular base risotto that I'm going to eat with something like chicken, especially, or some salmon. And that would be my pairing for this Chardonnay. But this Chardonnay has just like It has a tropical characteristic that I would say is somewhere between pineapple, which can be pretty indicative of Chardonnay, but also like there's a lot of really pretty papaya. And then that creaminess that just hits in the mouthfeel. So you get a nice fat mouthfeel, but then a lot of really fresh, kind of the finish of that tropical fruit and the freshness in the mid palate to the finish, which really helps with going back. It makes you want to drink more of it because it's a very fresh acid as opposed to something that could be a little too cloying and build up in the mouth. So you're like, okay, I had a glass and now I'm good. But this one, you want to keep going back for more sips.
Wow. So, you know, the Italian half is definitely coming through in the risotto.
Yes.
Now, I will say that you were kind enough to send me a bottle to sample, and I actually had it with lobster, and I will tell you, it was pitch perfect.
Oh, yes.
For me, because it just really cuts through the richness of the lobster. But like you said, you know, there was just, by the way, the one thing that I loved about this Chardonnay, which it's for me personally, I think it's very difficult for a lot of California Chardonnays to achieve, is balance. This wine was beautifully balanced between fruit, mouthfeel, and acidity. And that's tough because Chardonnay, you generally get 2 out of 3 in my opinion. And that's fine. I can live with any 2 out of 3. But to get all three in there, it's just really, it was a treat to try this wine. So I guess now that we've talked all about how wonderful this wine is, we're going to tell everybody, A, how much is it? And B, how can they get it?
So our website, Trombetta Family Wines, is the best way to do this. We are distributed a little bit here and there nationally. Our website tends to say what states we are in because I also love to say, I make the wine, I don't sell it, because that is my mother and I try to help her and she always laughs at me when I'm like, I'm not the best salesperson in the world. And she's like, Erica, we're a small business, it doesn't matter. So this wine retails for $65.
What?
Yes.
All right, I'll take a case. and Trombetta Family Wines, and of course, you'll ship to states you can ship to.
Yes. Yes. And we can ship to most states. So that's the good news there.
All right. Let's talk about wine number two. What else you got for us today?
So wine number two is the 2021 Indindoli Pinot Noir. And this one's very exciting because Indindoli is now our estate. Also, the backstory is that Carmine Indindoli is the engineer at Hewlett Packard who took down my parents and another group of rowdy engineers from HP back in the day and taught them how to make wine. So that is really where the journey started for my parents in the 80s. And so we started leasing the vineyard, and this is our estate. And this 21 is our inaugural vintage of this Russian River Pinot. We've been making Chardonnay from this site since 2015, but now we get to make the Pinot as well.
Wow, it's sort of like a full circle moment here.
It really is. And it was very exciting. When I was told that we were getting the Pinot and getting to take the whole site, I got very excited because Carmine is kind of someone who I consider like the godfather in the wine industry. He's the man who's so many people know him. He's an amazingly brilliant man when it comes to winemaking and farming. I actually worked for him during my summers at Fresno State, helping him install small vanity vineyards for a lot of people because he was one of the only people who would install sites under 5 acres.
Very cool. So tell me a little bit about this Pinot.
So this Pinot is, it's kind of fun because there are two different blocks of Pinot, and the block in the front of the property was planted in the 90s and basically going off of Carmine's memory, because there aren't really any real records of what was planting there. It's kind of a field blend hodgepodge in the front, which I love. So we have like some Martini clone, some clone 94, which is Kendall Jackson's old clone. And then the back part of the site has 667 and 115, some more iconic Dijon clones. It's on very sandy soil, warmer site, but it still has that cool fog that comes in the Russian Valley, a Russian River Valley, and kind of socks in the area. This Pinot is really fun because I contribute this a lot to the 94 and the Martini. It has this like really pretty black red cherry characteristic that kind of mingles with the earthy spiciness of the Martini. So you smell it and you're just like, wow, like this is really pretty red fruit. But then it's also got this like nice, the Russian River kind of iconic red strawberry, a little bit of cranberry going on. But then just so much of this white pepper, kind of savory, earthy, herbal component. And when I say herbal, I don't mean green herbs. I mean what you think of when you're making like a roast. You know, you're using your rosemary, your sage, and your thyme, your oregano, something very savory, not something medicinal. I feel like herbal is one of those like what we would equate to a four-letter word in the wine industry when people use it as a descriptor. It's an absolutely lovely Pinot, and I love making it, and it's just so unique and different from the Gap's Crown Pinot, for example. And that's something that I love that it stands out on.
Are you getting the same sort of diurnal swings? The swings in temperature from day to night, the large gaps in swings in temperature and day to night in this vineyard site that you would say maybe up in Gap's Crown?
So Gap's Crown is going to have much shorter times in the diurnal shift. So the diurnal shift is the cool to warm temperature, and especially with the Pacific Ocean playing such an amazing role in all of this with the Gap's Crown. Gap's Crown only sees the heat of the day for maybe a few hours because of its elevation and that wind tunnel of the Petaluma Gap. This Russian River site, because it is in the Russian River and the Russian River Valley, can get quite warm because it doesn't have that wind tunnel effect. And there really are so many windbreaks on this with so many different trees that when you're getting a breeze, you're very happy for it. But usually there isn't a massively windy gust that comes through. So the diurnal shift is much more pronounced in the Russian River, just because when it gets hot, it stays hot longer. In the Petaluma Gap, the diurnal shift is there, but it's for a much shorter period of time. So it's just, once again, how that elevation, wind tunnel versus more kind of valley floor and less wind influence plays into it.
So we've got this beautiful, savory, elegant Pinot Noir from your, what I will now call your estate vineyard. Congratulations.
Yes.
Again. What would you, what would be the ideal pairing with this wine?
Ooh, okay. So I have two. One that I would absolutely love would be actually barbecued salmon, like wood plank barbecued salmon with fresh, like grilled asparagus, grilled zucchini, something with a little bit of char on it, but something that's also fatty like the salmon. So that way you have some, this is going to sound weird, but like freshness with the green vegetables, even though they've been charred on the grill, but then also the fattiness of the salmon with that wood influence, I think would be so beautiful with this Pinot. And then also on the same kind of like idea, the other thing that this Pinot is absolutely amazing with, and you're going to laugh at me because the Italian is coming out again, okay, is like, give me some pasta bolognese, because with some nice red meat and all of the pretty spices that you put in with a nice fresh tomato sauce, but then you also have some like really rich pasta with it, that would be perfect.
I would not have thought about the second one.
And I eat pasta with everything, though. And all
I wish it wasn't snowing here today. Otherwise, I would dig out the grill and definitely do the
salmon,
cedar plank salmon. That just sounds like a perfect pairing with this.
Yes.
And again, what's the price point on this wine?
So this wine is $58 for our inaugural vintage. It was a little bit less. And we also, being that Indindoli doesn't have quite the name reputation and competition for fruit sales, our Indindoli is a little bit less than our Gap's Crown is.
Well, I can tell you one thing, that price isn't going to last long, because as this wine gains its reputation, it's going to become very hard to find. So if anybody's listening, I seriously recommend that you get over to the website again. Erica, the website is?
TrombettaFamilyWines.com.
And I would get this wine ASAP. It is beautiful. It is elegant. Just like you, Erica.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. And I just want to thank you so much for your time today. It is so great to see your evolution in the industry, and the fact that, you know, you're making these gorgeous wines, not just for others, but particularly for your family. And it really is a family affair. Congratulations.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of The Vine Guy, a WTOP News podcast. And remember, until the next time, do good. Drink well.